Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this event organized by the Hellenic Observatory at the London School of Economics. My name is Spyros Economidis, and I'm the Deputy Director of the Observatory. And it's my great pleasure to introduce you to this event, which revolves around the themes of public trust and citizen engagement in Greek politics. This afternoon, we have a distinguished panel of speakers who are going to look at what lessons can we learn from the recent past in terms of public trust and citizen engagement in Greek politics. Is there scope for reform? And what scope for reform is there? Is new technology a friend or a foe? And might it create a new type of politics? We will consider the role of VuliWatch as a non-governmental organization and its impact in Greece, both from an academic and a practitioner's point of view. Our speakers today are extremely well placed to discuss these themes. Our main speaker today is Stefanos Loukopoulos, who is the co-founder and director of the Athens-based NGO VuliWatch, which does parliamentary monitoring and transparency promotion. Stefanos holds a BA in political science and a master's in international relations, as well as one in international conflict analysis. And he has worked in the NGO sector, both in London and in Brussels, as well as the European Parliament. On top of that, Stefanos is a founding member of the international association Parliament Watch Network, and has served as a member of the Council of Citizens Control of the Greek Public Broadcasting Service. Our two discussants today, in order in which they will appear, are Vasiliki Georgiadou and Lambrini Rori. Vasiliki Georgiadou is a professor of political science at the Department of Political Science at Pantheon University, and she's also director of the Center for Political Research. She has studied political science in Athens at Pantheon and in Münster in Germany, and her current research interests focus on the comparative analysis of far-right parties, as well as on the phenomena of populism, radicalism, and extremism. Lambrini Rori is assistant professor at the National and Kapodistrian University of Athens, and she has previously held a number of positions in the UK and elsewhere in Europe. She's been a lecturer in politics at the University of Exeter, a Jean Monnet Fellow at the European University Institute in Florence, a Levendis Fellow in Modern Greek Studies at St. Anthony's College, Oxford, where she was also a research associate of CSOX, the Southeast European Studies Unit. And she was a Marie Curie Fellow at Bournemouth University. Indeed, Lambrini has a connection with the Hellenic Observatory in that she held the grant in which she did a study, a very good study, on low-intensity violence in crisis-ridden Greece, evidence from the radical right and the radical left. Before I turn to Stefanos to make his introductory remarks, can I just remind you that there is a question and answer session after our speakers have finished their presentations. And please, to pose a question, use the Q&A function at the bottom of your screen if you're using Zoom. And if you're using Facebook, please add your questions in the comments section. For those of you who wish to tweet, the hashtag is LSCGreece. And may I remind you that the event will be recorded and later will be made available as a podcast on the Hellenic Observatory website and through the Hellenic Observatory's YouTube channel. Without further ado, can I invite Stefanos Loukopoulos to make his introductory remark? Stefanos.
Thank you, Spiro, and thank you for having me here today with you. Today I'm going to briefly talk to you about our work at VuliWatch and provide you with a picture, if you like, of the current situation of Greek democracy, at least the way I through my lens, if you like. So Greece is often referred to as the birthplace of democracy, and that might well be the case. However, the country's rich historical heritage should not be perceived as a de facto guarantor of its democratic future. The admirable, albeit relatively recent democratic tradition of this country often acts as a beautifully crafted thick veil, which coincidentally, if not conveniently, adorns and covers a rather problematic political present. The rise of extreme nationalism and the normalization of alt-right rhetoric in the public sphere and discourse, the increase of social and economic inequalities, the ever-growing delegitimization in the eyes of citizens of political institutions and parliamentary democracy, the proliferation, not to say, the institutionalization of fake news and often state-sponsored disinformation, the continuing decline in voter turnout during election, are all sound indicators that Greek democracy is, if not failing, at least facing some serious challenges that need to be addressed with urgency. So every issue I mentioned in the long and bleak list that I just went through, I believe that is horizontally permeated by a constant variable, a common issue, if you like, which is none other than the fact that a large portion of citizens in Western democracies, and more so in Greece, feel let down by the political elites and the democratic process as a whole. Citizens, in other words, feel that they have no influence over their elected representatives, that their voices are not really being heard, that they have no possibility to monitor and check what is being discussed and decided behind closed doors. It seems that politics has reverted to an exclusive sport of the elites, where you need to be highly educated and preferably rich to not only actively participate, but even to actually understand legislation that at the end of the day concerns your everyday life. Let's face it, voting once every 4 years is not enough. Democracy is not just there to give a carte blanche to a government to act as it pleases for 4 years. Citizen participation, oversight, and access to information are all essential elements for a truly democratic system of governance. Without this, I'm afraid that the issues in my list will continue to gradually intensify, rendering democracy in the eyes of many obsolete. So at VuliWatch, we believe that this, if you like, vicious cycle of democracy's stagnation and gradual erosion has to and can be broken once and for all. It is obviously a long-term process, which will require significant effort and commitment by all relevant stakeholders. However, it is imperative that the seeds of change are sown and the right conditions are created for the gradual shift towards a new, more open and inclusive political paradigm. A political paradigm based on trust, accountability, and of course, transparency. So how does one go about doing this? How do we go about restoring public trust while creating the right conditions for increased citizen engagement? Well, I think that at the risk of sound simplistic, I think that the answer to this question can be fairly straightforward. Namely, through the integration of digital technology and more specifically civic technology in the political realm. Civic technology is viewed by many, including myself, obviously, as the platform upon which we can jumpstart civic engagement, public trust, and enhance democracy's main tenets. Through its use, we can extract, codify, aggregate, visualize, and disseminate information to a wide audience in a very short space of time. We can enhance checks from the bottom up, provide citizens with monitoring tools, and therefore promote accountability as well as citizen participation. In other words, civic tech can contribute towards bridging the trust gap between the political system and citizens. So, in a nutshell, the equation here is fairly simple. Transparency and access to information / openness fosters trust and knowledge. Trust and knowledge are essential stimulants for substantial civic participation, and civic participation legitimizes and fortifies democracy. So allow me now to present you Vuli Watch and give you some concrete examples of applying civic tech in politics based on our work in Greece. So bear with me for a moment while I try to share my presentation with you. Okay, here we go. I'm not sure you can see it, I guess you can. So a few words about Vuli Watch. Vuli Watch is a parliamentary monitoring and transparency watchdog organization. We were set up, I would say, in the height of the political crisis that followed the Greek financial meltdown crisis. And the main goal of our organization is to obviously promote transparency and accountability in the Greek political system. As I mentioned earlier on, try to push for the emergence of a new political culture based on openness, transparency, and active citizenship, which are fundamental components of a well-functioning democratic system of governance. Bridge the trust gap between politicians and citizens, and at the same time, fortify, if you like, and strengthen democracy in Greece. And obviously, its institutions, and specifically parliament. Now, how do we go about doing all these great things? Well, we tend to juggle between two spheres, two fields, if you like. On the one hand, we develop civic technology tools which allow citizens to monitor, to participate, and to be informed on political issues and legislative issues. And at the same time, we engage in advocacy and campaign work so as to push our agenda. For the purpose of today's event, I'm not going to focus so much on the advocacy and the campaign aspect of our work, but mostly on civic tech. So here in front of you, you've got our main weapon, Vuli Watch, a platform which is built so as to foster transparency, accountability, and citizen engagement. I realize that the platform is in Greek. For those of you that don't speak, that can't understand it, I'll try and explain, describe what you guys are seeing. So this is the main page of our platform, and you can see in front of you a series of bubbles. Each bubble refers to a specific tool, civic tool that we offer citizens. I'll go through them really quickly. So first off, what we do is we try to help citizens that might not be so engaged with politics to understand how parliament works and also to get to know their members of parliament. For this purpose, we've created specific filters, as you can see from this slide and the other slide, through which citizens can filter through profiles of elected members of parliament. In these profiles, here's an example of the Prime Minister's profile. We offer a series of information which we believe is essential for citizens to actually understand what their elected representatives do in parliament, who they are, what their background is, and so on. In this specific slide, we present through a simple graph, really, the political career, if you like, of each political person, of each member of parliament, the politician. You can see when he was elected in parliament. You can see what position he's held in parliament, but both at the government level. People can have access to the politicians' CVs. And obviously, and this is something I'm particularly proud of, they can have access to their asset declarations, data that we've gathered from the official documents and have present to citizens in the format that you can see in front of you. Scrolling down from what we saw earlier on, we're still on the profile of each member of parliament, you have something like a social media feed where you can see you can filter through and browse all the activities related to the specific parliamentarian that you're interested in. You can see how he voted in parliament during roll call votes. You can see his parliamentary record in terms of the questions that he poses in parliament and so forth. And also we've got a historical, if you like, archive, well, it's not really historical, an archive of the politicians' activities as well. So one can browse by year as well. And here, for instance, you can see the topics, the main topics, the prevailing topics of the specific parliamentarians' questions in parliament. And the most important aspect, I think, of our work, and part of the reason why we sort of became fairly recognizable in Greece, is the fact that we offer through these profiles the possibility for citizens to send questions to the members of parliament. Through this form that you can see in front of you, citizens can filter through various options and select the MP that might be best suited to respond to their questions. We've got filters that relate to the constituency, to the political party and political group that he belongs to, and also the parliamentary committees that they're active in. So this question is being, once this question is drafted by citizens, it comes to Bully Watch. We've got a team that goes over through these questions. We've got a code of conduct going on so as to secure sort of civilized, if you like, dialogue between the two parties. And this is a bit of a safety mechanism for politicians as well, and something that, you know, makes them participate in the whole process. Here you've got on your left-hand side, on the left-hand side of your screen, you can see an example of a question, and on the right-hand side, an answer provided by a parliamentarian. Each question and answer is public, so any citizen can browse through the profiles and see the questions and answers that the parliamentarian has given. And obviously, they can also rate the questions and the answers. So that was the first main component of our website, of our platform. The other one is basically, we call it VoteWatch. You know, it does what the name suggests. We basically record all votes, both roll call and non-roll call votes that take place in parliament. We again have a series of filters which allow citizens to browse bills according to the topic, according to the policy area, year or type of bill. And obviously we provide thorough yet in non-legalese terms analysis of these bills. We go through each and every article. We provide information as to why each political party voted the way it did. And obviously we provide the actual results of each voting process. All the data and information that are available on the website are open, used and reused by whoever is interested, by the way. The other tool we offer citizens, this is a bit geeky, if I may, it's basically a monitoring tool that monitors all. Through this tool, citizens can see the number is mostly quantitative. So they can use, they can compare different parliaments, see what each political party does in parliament in terms of parliamentary means of parliamentary control. And obviously, the main topics, the hottest topics that were discussed during each parliamentary season or during each month or whatever one decides to look at. And also we provide a list of the most active MPs during a given period of time. Then we've got another tool that we offer citizens is the so-called policy monitor. This tool, we basically developed it for during election periods. And it's a sort of like help me vote type of guide. But then we decided to keep it online because I think it's quite useful for citizens to be able to check what political parties promised prior to the elections and what they're actually doing post-elections. So through this tool, citizens can select the political parties they're interested in. They can select the policy areas that they wish to check. And once they do so, you have this like image in front of you whereby there's like various boxes containing the positions of each political parties on these given issues so that someone can actually compare it. Finally, this is the latest addition to our arsenal of civic tech tools. We've got the asset declarations tool whereby people can actually, through graphics and visualizations and graphs, they can have an overview of the asset declarations for politicians. We provide various graphs, as you can see, one of them on your right-hand side is like about the average income of each politician, of each MP by a political party. On your left-hand side, you can see, for instance, the top 10 of the MPs with the highest income. And obviously there's various filters here as well, so you can play with the data information as you please. Another thing that this tool offers is a comparative sort of analysis, if you like, through which one can compare two different politicians. And obviously we also provide a very thorough presentation of the actual contents of the asset declarations of politicians. So these are roughly the main tools that we use. With regards to our impact, I mean, given that, as I mentioned earlier on, the Greek political system is still quite averse to openness and transparency, I believe that we've managed to make some progress over the last 7 years. So far, we've got over 75% of members of parliament that engage with the platform. This is like quite an achievement, I would say, especially compared to when we were making our first steps, where MPs were super hesitant. When I say engaging with the platform, I mean that they actually send reply to citizens' questions or upload their own content, as I forgot to mention earlier on, that through their profiles, they can also upload their own content, such as speeches or press releases and the like. We count over 500,000 unique visitors per year, which is relatively okay, given Greece's relatively low internet penetration and aging population. On a more concrete level, we've had numerous cases where citizens' questions sent through Fully Watch to MPs were actually discussed in Parliament by members of Parliament, which is, I believe, a concrete example of mediated direct democracy, if you like. And we've had a few cases, especially recently, where citizens might have raised like specific problems of their constituency, and such as, I don't know, the lack of like medical equipment in a health center, or a problem with a local school, etc. And you know, these issues were actually brought to the attention of parliamentarians through Woolly Watch, and in turn they actually took action, and some of them were solved. And then aside from this, we've and just to give you a glimpse of our campaign in advocacy work, we've successfully campaigned for the publication of MPs' asset declarations in a machine-readable format. In fact, and that's why I said earlier on that I'm proud of the asset declarations tool, because prior to a few years ago, up until 2016, asset declarations of members of parliament were uploaded on the parliament's website for just 30 days in a handwritten scanned PDF format, which made it impossible for any sane person to actually sit down and understand what's written, what is the content of these documents. And obviously it made it really hard for people to reuse these documents. So our campaign was about making these documents into, turning these documents into a machine readable format, and also to extend the period that they're uploaded online. And you know, this was our first, let's say, big campaign work, if you like. I mean, we had to move in between the border of like being slightly legal, in the sense that we republished these documents, the asset declarations, we digitalized them and published them on our website, just to show Parliament that, you know, if three people can do this, then they can do it too. I said before that it was slightly illegal, because back then the reproduction of asset declaration was not really something to be done, but it worked. So finally, our other big impact is fairly recent. We have been campaigning and advocating for a while for the establishment of basically for a legislation that would regulate lobbying activities in Greece. Very recently, the bill was passed in Parliament, and the bill in question contains a few of our original proposals, which we have communicated both to the ministries, the National Transparency Authority, but also through our presence and our speech in Parliament when they had invited us to give them our opinion. So this is Woolly Watch. This is what we do. And I hope I didn't bore you too much, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the discussion. Thank you very much.
Stefane, thank you very much indeed for that presentation of a very impressive initiative, which I think will lead to quite interesting questions and discussion in due course. Indeed, I have quite a few questions I'd like to ask, but I'll hold my fire for the time being. And now we'll turn to Vasiliki Georgiadou, who I think, if I'm not mistaken, is going to say a few things of a more conceptual nature about the content, not only of the Woolly Watch initiative, but the broader political scene in Greece. Vasiliki, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Spiros. Actually, I will start. Thank you. Thank you also the Hellenic Observatory, of course, for inviting me and giving me this opportunity to contribute to this discussion. I will start with some conceptual remarks concerning trust, political and public trust. Then I continue with a few references to empirical evidence vis-a-vis trust and political trust, and end with some comments on trust in NGOs and public engagement. As we all know, trust is a polymorphic and a multi-level entity. There are distinct forms of trust. We mainly focus on social and political trust, and different levels of trust. Trust actually ranges along a continuum from high to low degree. Social trust is essential to civil society because the existence of social trust reduces uncertainty and creates social capital. Political trust is closely linked to legitimacy, as Stefanos also mentioned, legitimacy of the political system. Social and political trust are interrelated to each other. Trust in public institutions, for instance, is a basis for trusting others, and trust in others reinforces political trust. One of the main concerns is the erosion of trust that threatens to affect social cohesion and political legitimacy. Social trust is more resistant than political trust, whereas political trust can change rapidly, reflecting short-term evaluations and citizens' expectations vis-a-vis political promises and outcomes. An interesting finding is that after the outbreak of the financial crisis in 2008, the share of people reporting to trust others did not change significantly, whereas trust in governments, trust in political parties went down dramatically. However, trust almost permanently coexists with distrust. Citizens do not either trust or distrust in the institutions, office holders, political elites, etc. There are different expressions of trust, actually. People tend to express generalized confidence to democratic principles, although they also express distrust in governments, in the mass media, in other political institutions. I have the chance to be part of a European Horizon 2020 research project led by Professor Lahusen of the University of Gießen, Germany, which is named Entrust, that means enlightened trust, and explores the role of trust and distrust in government. And according to our understanding of trust and distrust in this research project, critical citizens tend to be distrustful, which means that trusting is a dynamic process conditioned upon particular properties that goes in mixed directions. Although trust in national governments is deteriorating, people show trust in NGOs, or the educational system is also very high trusted by the citizens. Citizens might distrust public services, but they do trust the national health system even before the pandemic, and much more, of course, during the pandemic crisis. I would like to say that trust is not unconditional. Citizens do not either trust or distrust without a relational background. There are concerns, emotions, perceptions that give rise to trust and distrust. Democracies need forms of trust based on valid information, civil engagement, participation. Levels of trust are changing over time. However, the crisis of 2008 led to a significant loss of trust in national government in also all European and OECD countries. To give an example, in 2012, in the midst of crisis, Greece had the lowest score, with only 12% of the citizens to have expressed trust in government. Trust in government, as well as in national parliament, remained in Greece very low and only recently began to recover, being, however, below the European average. At that time of economic crisis, Greece showed the strongest decline in political trust compared to other crisis-ridden countries of the European South, which might explain the high level of radicalization and the tolerance vis-a-vis the use of violence. Trust in a series of public institutions has been declining, whereas trust in NGOs has risen over the past 3-4 years. According to the latest Edelman Trust barometer, half of the population expressed trust in NGOs, I mean globally, which is 2/3 between informed citizens, those with a college degree that belong to the upper 25% of income. An interesting finding is that almost half of the people globally trust information given by the NGOs. NGOs have a specific issue-based agenda combined with the fact that they are professionalized. They are therefore recognized as problem solvers, while governments are often accused of failing to solve problems. However, trust in NGOs fluctuates over time. It sank, for example, worldwide in 2015, which might mean that at least part of citizens is ambivalent vis-a-vis NGOs. In many countries, trust in NGOs is linked with the issue they mainly focus on and promote. In Greece, for example, environmental organizations and charity enjoy high level of trust according to the World Value Survey's data of 2018. NGOs' ownership in issues that are generally recognized as relevant is my reason for trusting non-governmental organizations. The professionalization of NGOs, which are more and more led by experts, as well as the formalization of their internal organizational structure, their focus on fundraising are aspects of a new reality of NGOs that might have a twofold effect concerning trust. On the one hand, professionalized NGOs gain visibility and citizens become familiar with their activity that might make them feel more efficacious. On the other hand, the fact that a bottom-up logic is losing ground to a top-down one might affect NGOs' trustworthiness. However, despite the skepticism, NGOs enjoy more trust than public institutions. Let me say a few words about Vuli Watch, which set up in the midst of economic crisis, when in Greece political trust collapsed. At that time, participation was characterized by radicalization, anti-establishment orientation, or even polemic against the political system at the national and the European level. Initiatives like Vuli Watch moved towards the opposite direction. Vuli Watch aimed to rebuild trust in parliament, promoting citizens' participation by providing tools, mainly, as we already had heard, digital tools that encourage citizens to engage in politics. Although the response rate is rather limited, but increasing, I think, over the years increasing, the idea of giving citizens the chance to ask questions and receive public replies from parliamentarians is really constructive and contributes to the establishment of a more open, a more transparent and accountable political system, which is the point in this initiative of Vuli Watch. However, we have to keep in mind that although civic technology is very important for civil participation, engagement in politics includes dimensions that go beyond the opportunity structured by internet. Innovative digital technology empowers those with the resources to the new digital world. I suppose this is the reason why Woolly Watch acts mainly within, but also beyond the digital realm, trying to bridge this gap between those parliamentarians and citizens familiar with the new technology and those with limited digital resources. Thank you for this opportunity to intervene in this discussion.
Vasiliki, thank you very much. We'll come back, obviously, to some of the big themes that you've raised in your presentation. But in the meantime, let me please turn to Lambri Nirori, who's going to comment on, I think, a variety of the themes that have been raised, and perhaps concentrate more specifically on one or two aspects and actors involved in this debate on public trust and citizen engagement. Lambri Nirori.
Good afternoon. First of all, I would like to thank the Hellenic Observatory for giving me the opportunity to comment on an important topic in an interesting panel. Even more so because I am a big fan of Woolly Watch. I think it is a great initiative, for it fosters monitoring of parliamentary activity, citizens' communication with the political personnel, and easy access to data by providing a channel for addressing questions and comments towards the MPs, as well as by monitoring policies and the level of consent in the Greek Parliament. Woolly Watch indirectly enhances accountability and promotes a culture of transparency. Even more so for us political scientists, it serves as a data bank on a number of topics central to the core of our discipline. Woolly Watch is a generous and a consistent provider. In this sense, the organization serves the purposes both of investigative journalism and political research. So following up from Vasiliki's very pertinent comments, I would like to develop three points for trust and one for the role of Woolly Watch. First of all, the general argument on low political and social trust in Greece needs, I think, to be rethought and re-examined. For years, Greece was discussed as part of Southern European countries with a strong state and a very weak civil society, colonized by clientelistic political parties, which is to a very great extent, it's true. As colleagues have shown, though, during the last decade, and to a large extent because of the financial crisis, many of those constants have changed or are changing. The state lost considerable wealth due to the fiscal consolidation and its capacity for redistribution due to other severe bailout constraints. The recent pandemic, though, has brought back dynamically state interventionism, and the important EU funds were fueled in the Greek economy. Civil society also has developed during the crisis, a fact which in itself manifests an investment in terms of social capital, whereas indignation and anti-systemic behavior are in recession since 2019. Also, the party system went through a turbulent period of centrifugal competition. All the parties collapsed and new appeared. This period now, though, seems to be more or less over, as flash parties either disappeared or oscillate above or below the threshold of 3% needed to enter parliament. A weaker two-partyism with a New Democracy and Syriza and a smaller party, Kinal, ex-PASOK, compose now the new normality in the party system, a fact which shows that old or pre-existing political parties have finally persisted, despite the lack of trust, the rage, and the disillusionment. Data provided by polling companies and research projects also show that political and social trust and expectations have slightly risen after the crisis, even though the general picture is the one that Vasiliki described. We are still at very, very low levels. So the idea of a social and political landscape in which social bonds are broken and political links are fragmented, I think it leads a lot of nuance. Citizens remain very critical in Greece. maybe as they should be anyway, but engagement, despite being selective, exists, showing awareness and interest. Secondly, I would like to highlight the importance of information on public trust and on the role of the media for the matter. There is a general argument for lack of trust in the media and the role of alternative news sources. In a very recent publication that I co-authored with Antonis Kalogeropoulos and Dimitra Dimitrakopoulou, which appeared in South European Society and Politics, we show that Greece is indeed an outlier when compared with other countries on media preferences. When comparing data from the Digital News Report of 2017 and 2019, the standard Eurobarometers for 2019 and the data from the Pew Research Center for 2018, the share of Greek respondents that trust the mass media, the traditional media, is significantly lower than in the other countries of our sample, which were Germany, Denmark, Spain, UK, and the US. The share of Greek respondents that agree that news media is free from undue political and commercial influences is significantly lower than in all other countries. Hence, Greece figures lower than all other countries in the trust in mass media. At the same time, when searching for alternative news consumption patterns, Greece is also an outlier in the sample, but this time it figures first, not last. This means that the share of Greek respondents that use social media, blogs or other digital-born outlets for news is significantly higher in Greece than in the other countries. So the distrust of Greeks in mass media is in general significantly higher than in other countries, and their preference for social media as well. News media are perceived as corrupt, biased, and of poor quality. In the digital news report open-ended answers. We hence observe a disruption in news consumption in Greece. Greeks emigrate from the offline to the online world when it comes to information. This brings me to the third point. I would like to say that this is not a new reality though. There is a historic interplay between media and politics in Greece and the lack of clarity or regulation in the legal framework. In this old dynamic of interdependence, the balance of power varies since 1974. It is not constant. The equilibrium shifts over time, and the configuration in this two-way relationship is decisive on media freedom, on the quality of journalism, and the quality of the political class. The recent financial crisis has left a blueprint in the media market and the journalistic field, whereas polarization in public sphere was transferred in the media, culminating in the period of the referendum in an open conflict between the media and the government. The attempts made by governments to regulate or to support the media, first in 2013 by abruptly seizing the public service broadcaster's function, then in 2016, by bypassing the Independent Broadcasting Authority to regulate TV licensing, and then during the pandemic to selectively finance the media, they have not helped to overcome dependencies or misinformation. So even if short-term gains were made for the party in power each time, delegitimization is a cost which is paid both by media and the political class. Of course, citizens have more alternatives than in the past, and the internet offers myriads of channels of information. This, however, does not mean that misinformation, biased news, or clientelism do not exist in alternative news sources. And by this, I would like to link to the role of Woolly Watch, which has spent a lot of energy in order to reveal the amounts and the criteria by which those amounts were given during the pandemic in the media by the current government. I believe that over the years, WulyWatch has expanded the field of its activities, developing a rather activist role, as well as having a journalistic blueprint and an influence over the direction of legislation, for instance, regarding climate protection lawmaking, the protection of whistleblowers, etc. So by taking action in a number of campaigns, it perceives its duty as a mission over issues of media funding, transparency in governmental partnerships, MPs' income, wealth, and property. This expansion in the scope of WulyWatch shows commitment in democratic values, ambition, and vision. Nonetheless, I believe it entails risks for the organization which might undermine its role and outcomes long-term. I will try to explain my argument. First of all, by priming certain issues versus others, it takes active role in the formation of the public agenda, whereas by adopting a certain framing in the topics chosen, it takes part in the political debate. Just to give you an example of what I mean, WulyWatch calculates the level of consent between political parties since 2019. In the published graph, it presents the relevant data as the level of identification with New Democracy. This is not so objective or neutral to my mind because it presents, for instance, Kinal's consent, which happens to be the highest, as identification with the government. Also, the graph is provided by a website which also has an identity. What is more, presenting the income and property of politicians is great because it concentrates information which is public but difficult to have access. I know this because myself, I have tried in the past to conduct research on the matter. In reality, though, it can create false impressions as aggregating private wealth by parliamentary group is at best misleading, and it can also be used by populist arguments or forces. Also, comparing politicians' income is problematic or can create distortions, as WulyWatch does not and cannot know the unofficial or latent sources of income of politicians, which, if known, might be giving completely different results in the comparison. Also, the campaign of the organization regarding transparency in media is very, very salient. I think it's very important to discuss this topic publicly. Nonetheless, state funding of the media is not new, and it won't be over after this government ends its mandate. So for WulyWatch to remain objective, it has to show the same fervor in seeking transparency in the future, otherwise it risks showing partiality. Lastly, and since our discussion is trust, I would like to say that trust is gained in a very slow pace and in a very meticulous way, but it can evaporate very quickly. So independent non-partisan organizations are extremely valuable and necessary, and they, if they remain in the long term in this mission, I mean to remain independent, objective, non-partisan, and transparent. If they become a part of the polarization and the conflict, a latent or a quasi opposition force, or if they try to substitute justice, they risk losing their credibility or to add up to the problem of lack of trust and disillusionment. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Lavini, and thank you to all three speakers for putting this subject into context, both in terms of institutions, in terms of politics, and in terms of a variety of different actors. Let me just briefly ask the members of our audience, if they do have questions, to pose them through the Q&A function at the bottom of the Zoom screen. And for those of you participating via Facebook, please add your questions as a comment. And while I wait for the audience to ask their questions, let me pose a couple of questions of my own to get the ball rolling. And please feel free, all of you, to weigh in and give us your opinions on these questions. Stefano, let me just ask with a general question. We'll talk about Vuliwoj in detail in a second, and perhaps we'll also concentrate on media and certain historical events. But you painted a rather gloomy picture at the beginning of your presentation, in which you stressed the challenges to Greek democracy, and you gave us a quite extensive list of those challenges. Extreme nationalism, poor electoral turnouts, Vasiliki and Lamrini talked about trust and falling trust. Can I ask you and the other two members of the panel, what do you see as the biggest challenge in terms of Greek democracy in 2021? What is it that you think has to be identified and dealt with most quickly in terms of what you do, advocacy, or what we should be thinking about as academics, or what politicians and policymakers should be really concerned about as being, you know, at stake in terms of Greek democracy? Stefano.
Thank you, Spiro. This is a very good question. And I'm not sure I could actually point my finger on one specific thing. The matter of the fact is that the years of the austerity and financial crisis, I believe that have scarred to a great extent the relationship, if you like, and trust between politicians and citizens. And this mistrust is perpetually growing, I believe. And I think that if I had to point to somewhere, would be that this mistrust is fueled by corruption and lack of transparency. Corruption and lack of transparency doesn't only feed mistrust, but it also feeds polarization. The atmosphere in Greece over the last few years has been very, very tense. There's heated debates, almost violent debates, occurring at every level of the public discourse, whether it's on TV, in the streets, online, and the like. This polarization has tended to blind to an extent people and to render them from political beings into political hooligans, whereby they will attach to a party regardless of what this party might represent or its actions. So to sum up, I think that biggest issue at the moment in Greece, which is feeding this feeling of mistrust towards political institutions and democracy, is lack of transparency, corruption, and obviously the after effects of a very, very harsh and long austerity program, which has arguably angered a lot of people. So it's going to take a lot of time to mend this relationship. One can only hope that finally the political leadership of Greece, the political parties of Greece as a whole, will put aside the fundamental differences to focus on issues that go beyond ideologies, and these issues are transparency and fight corruption.
Thank you very much. I want to come back to some of the things you said, but let me involve very quickly Vasiliki and Lambrini and ask them the very same question. You both talked about trust. Vasiliki, you talked about trust and political and social cohesion. There is distrust, but there may be some trust in certain public institutions over others. Let me ask you the question as well. What do you think is the most obvious and serious challenge to trust in politics? What is the underlying feature which you think causes the kind of ruptures that Stefanos was talking about?
This is not an easy question, actually, Spiros. To establish trust, it is not easy. you cannot establish trust in an environment, in a political climate of polarization. Stefanos mentioned the need to put aside polarization and to bring more consensus, more cooperation within the Greek political sphere. And I think this is the most important. This is, according to my view, the challenge number one for the Greek politics, to trust a more consensual model of governance. The lack of centrist positions and the lack of centrist parties, this is also a big problem, a big issue in the Greek political scene, in the Greek political arena. We need centrist position to come in front, and new parties that are in favor of such positions. I think this is the most challenge, to put aside polarization, which increased during, especially during the crisis, although a culture of polarization was from the very beginning, was a feature, was a characteristic from the very beginning of the Third Greek Republic. But we have to put aside this polarization and to bring more moderate and more centrist position and politics and way of governance within the Greek political arena.
Thank you, Lambini. Would you like to comment on this point about trust and what the biggest challenge to trust is, and whether the political system has to somehow overcome polarization and shift to the center?
Yes. First of all, I agree completely with the points that Stefanos and Vasiliki raised. Both corruption, lack of transparency, the quality of institutions, and polarization—they all undermine this. Effort to regain trust in institutions and the political system. Given the very specific context that we are after the crisis, and those are the first years that we have many crises, but not the financial crisis, which was in the minds of many people equal to austerity. We're no longer in that in this context, I believe that what it is important now for the political system in order to build trust is to create opportunities for the younger generations, job opportunities, to create a framework of equal opportunities, to give access to open calls for jobs, to give citizens the capacity, and especially young citizens, because the biggest distrust comes from the younger generations, so to give them the opportunity to seek for jobs or participation in the public sphere via transparent and equal ways. For instance, if there are open calls for jobs, good quality jobs, if people manage to develop, acquire a bit of wealth, because one of the most important issues, I believe, during the crisis was that people not only felt abandoned by the political system, but they felt also very, very poor. So for me, giving a chance to create wealth it will bring back trust to people. So it's not only about how the political system works, but what kind of opportunities it gives to the people in order to foster trust.
Okay, let me just pursue some of these ideas because I'd like to concentrate on the big picture a bit longer before we ask some more specific questions, perhaps about Vuli Watch as a platform. And there are some questions coming in from the audience about social media and what role they play in this kind of discussion. Stefan, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were suggesting in your most recent remarks that it's not just consensual politics and a move to the center, as Vasiliki said, which may be what we need, but something akin to post-ideological politics, if that's possible, that ideology should be removed from the political arena, and that we should find some other way of discussing politics, discussing the relationship between state and society, discussing the role of citizens in public policy. Some people would say that's not really realistic. I mean, some people would say that politics is partly about ideology, and that's always going to be what contestation is about. I would also add, just as a footnote from my own point of view, that perhaps we should also concentrate on the language of politics in Greece, which adds to polarization. So it's not simply that we haven't moved to the middle ground or that electoral groupings don't want to capture that middle ground, be it Nea Dimokratia or Syriza, but in fact, this constant reference to left and right as a way of describing Greek politics doesn't necessarily help us understand what consensual politics might mean or what the center ground really is.
Yeah, so I probably didn't express myself right. I personally don't believe in post-ideological politics, as you correctly pointed out. Ideology is an essential feature and component of political life. Ideology is everywhere, and that's because ideologies have been crafted or modeled or developed over the years based on specific human needs or perspectives. So no, you cannot remove the ideology from the political. What I was trying to say, though, is that some issues are beyond ideology. Transparency, for instance, is not something that is advocated by the right or the left or the center. Transparency should be something that permeates horizontally the ideological spectrum. Same goes with fighting corruption and the like. So I do believe that ideology is crucial. I do believe also, however, that some issues which could help improve the condition of the Greek democracy are beyond ideology. Our problem in Greece is not ideology, in other words. Our problem in Greece is the fact that we are basically stuck in this nepotistic, clientelistic political system which refuses to progress and to go beyond this antiquated and not productive way of making politics. And the way you can do that, in my personal opinion, is to create a consensus among all political forces and ideologies, a political consensus which should not focus on ideological issues, on the free market economy or more of a centrally planned economy. No, but on issues that such as transparency, such as accountability. These things are, they're not ideological, they are basic democratic characteristics. And those we should all preserve, and those we should all strive for. That's what we're trying to do through our activities. We're trying to convince people and political parties that this is the focus, this is the problem, and this is where we should focus. We often say, because we often deal with issues that might be quite complex in terms of communicating them to the layman, an average person. There might be issues that pertain to bills, legislation, etc. And even transparency or accountability. A lot of people out there don't really know why, what they are and why they are important. So what we're trying to do is to, try to make people understand by using simple examples such as, you know what, part of the reason why today, you know, Greece's economy is doing as it is, part of the reason why your salary is where it is, part of the reason why your pension has been cut, et cetera, et cetera, has also got to do with the fact that for decades, the country has been ruled by political parties that did not do things with transparency and enough accountability. So that is my opinion. And I think that, you know, there is no political color when it comes to these notions of transparency.
Okay, thank you, Lambrine. Would you like to come in at this point and perhaps say a few words about this particular issue? You did also mention the generational issue, and I just wanted to pursue that and say whether there are generational cleavages that, you know, the younger people wish to see a different kind of politics, and maybe that is problematic in terms of society and views about the political system and politics in Greece in general.
First of all, regarding ideological, let's say the ideological character of issues like Stefanos mentioned, transparency, etc. The problem is that the political system, although it has always been polarized, when it comes to issues of transparency or party finances, etc., the political parties which have parliamentary representation, they function as we say in the terminology of political parties as a cartel, in the sense that they co-decide the rules of the game in a way that it makes it difficult for citizens to have a say in those decisions. In that sense, I believe that it's important to have as many NGOs as possible to require transparency. And I think the same goes for the relationship with the media, as I said. Now, for this issue of intergenerational justice, we know that during the crisis, something like a million of Greeks have went out of the country. They went abroad because they couldn't find jobs. They searched for opportunities and there were no opportunities in the country. This was not only about finding a job. It was not only unemployment. It was about how the system worked. We know now from all those diaspora surveys that we have that there is also, there was a dissatisfaction with the political system and the way that the institutions function. So I believe it's important to put some, let's say, to give some oxygen in the system in the sense of the renovation of the political system. People have to be able to get into politics, not only because if you're not a member of a political party since the very, very early years of your life, or if you're not, don't come from a particular political family, the other way that you have to enter politics is indignation and anti-systemic behavior. Those were the figures that were favored during the crisis. So the new people that we saw in politics, even if this is a bit general as a comment to make now, there were people who could profit from the anti-systemic behavior. So if we don't want to see those easy channels, which are anti-democratic, which foster anti-democratic behaviors, I think that the political system has to find ways to foster participation and active participation of people who have felt out of the system and who cannot really influence politics via their vote. So in that sense, yes, I believe there's an intergenerational injustice that has to be dealt by the current political system.
Thanks, Lambrini. Vasiliki, let me turn to you. I'm sure you'd like to comment on this question of consensual politics, the center ground, post-ideological politics. But could I just add something to that as a footnote to the question? And that is that we know that patronage politics and nepotistic politics work in two directions. It's, you know, it's something that there must be a willing audience for. And I think one of the key things that we haven't really touched upon yet is the general view that, historically speaking, the Greek electorate or the Greek society has had of the Greek state, that the Greek state gives, we receive, and we're not part of that state. Is the idea of creating some kind of new middle ground in politics predicated on the idea of changing how we think about the state and our relationship with the state in Greece, that it's not us and them, that the state is us and we are the state, and that moving forward together, we can actually address some of the issues that Vuliwatch is interested in terms of citizen engagement, trust, transparency, and so on and so forth. Vasiliki.
Spiros, this is actually a cultural issue that we cannot affect, or it cannot be affected very easily. How we, what we expect from the state, how the Greek citizens imagine state, this is, this has a cultural character, if I can use this expression. However, there is not all about ideology. As Stefano said, there are principles of democracy, for instance, transparency, accountability. And the principles of democracy, I would say, are ideological neutral, actually. All parties from the right to the left, they are in favor of transparency. Of course, they have to improve that, and they have to implement transparency in their own policy, in their party, when they came to the government, etc. I believe that ideologies are different, but there are convergences between ideologies, because ideologies are not so much polarized as it was in the past. Except that there are issues, for instance, environment or citizens' rights, that are not so much ideological, that don't have an ideological character so much. They are not completely ideological issues. In Germany, for instance, the liberals and the Greens and the Social Democrats are in favor to make a government. That means issues, important issues can be combined, and different parties can converge and at the end make policies about different issues. So I would say yes, there are ideologies, but at the moment, there are very important, very relevant issues we have to deal with, and moderate policies and convergences are possible in Greece as well, although this culture of convergences and consensus do not exist, actually.
Okay, thank you. Let me take this discussion in a slightly different direction and incorporate a question that's coming from one of the participants in the seminar. Stefano, in your introductory remarks, you obviously talked a lot about digital technology and you talked a lot about CivTech, the idea of civic technology. We do live in a digital age, and this does affect how we behave as political beings. And Lambrini, you also mentioned in quite detail the problems that exist with media and how it affects either the political life of Greece or citizen participation in the political life of Greece as a sort of lens which distorts what is going on and how we perceive it. Let me throw into this mix the question of social media. We have a question from Ioana Nula, who's the research director of the Internet Commission, who asks that social media are largely perceived by audiences as empowering, while we have abundant evidence that they erode trust in public institutions and subvert democratic processes. We've seen how this has been used effectively across the Atlantic, especially under the Trump presidency. So the question she asks is, how does Vuli Watch address this dynamic and how does it affect your work? But I think the question is broadly to do with social media and how this impacts questions of trust, transparency, and citizen participation in the political system. Can we trust it? Can we trust social media? Stefano.
Yeah, great question. I, however, have disagree with the way it's been brought forward, because it seems to me like we're treating social media as an entity, as something. Social media is what we make of it, I would say. I mean, social media is neither bad or good. It's not a black and white issue, in the sense that yes, social media can be a vehicle for the proliferation of fake news or radical extremist groupings that manage through social media to gain a vast following. But on the other hand, social media can have the exact opposite function. We've seen many cases where social media have been used for a good cause, if you like. Vuli Watch makes extensive use of social media because that's the best way that we can communicate with a large number of people. So, I do believe that social media should be better regulated. I do believe that they pose challenges, but they also can and do act for towards good causes, towards better causes, towards more democratic causes, if you like. In other words, the same way that an alt-right group might use social media to spread the message, so can an organization such as Vuli Watch. So, I wouldn't say that social media is a threat per se. Rather, it's something that we should regulate better so as for it to not pose such a big threat. So that's my take on it, briefly.
Okay, Lambrini, could I turn to you? You actually made quite a few comments about the media and the role of the media in Greek politics. What about social media? How do they enter into the debate? Is it an empowering force? Is it a disruptive force? What does it do to the generational issue? Because there are a lot of people who generationally are not on social media. They're not competent. They don't feel comfortable on social media. So what's your take on this?
First of all, I think there is a vast amount of research being produced during the last years on the quality and the effects of social media in public debate and in the political outcomes. So I think that we are in very early days to be able to say a scientific valid view, because this is still, I think, the grounds is still moving on how people perceive social media and how much do they trust social media, what are the effects. So I think that we will be discussing about this issue for the next 10 years or so, because First of all, we have more platforms, we have different roles that social media take into politics, we have the issues of regulation. It's too early to say. We know that initially social media were seen as a form of communicating without, let's say, influences from media or other sources. So they were thought to be more transparent. They're more trusted in countries like Greece, where trust in mass media is so low. But at the same time, we know that they have been used for anti-systemic campaigns. The extremist right or far left organizations also use it for disseminating their messages. They create echo chambers, but at the same time, now there are researchers saying this is an exaggerated finding. There is also even the most extreme polls, they lose their, let's say, solid boundaries in this environment of social media. So to be honest, I don't have a very, very solid view of what those effects are. I believe it's not a black or white situation. There are ways of misinforming the public in social media as well, of creating also false impressions, because we are more or less communicating with our peers and with people who we trust. So we cannot know if we had other contacts or influences, how would that affect our perception of how things work. But I think that a sort of a regulation will very soon be needed, because all this amount of fake news that we have seen, especially during the pandemic, can be damaging for things which are beyond politics. So let's say public health, etc. It is also a generational matter, because the younger generations, they find it easier to communicate via social media and to have this impression that they co-form the public agenda, whereas they have the impression that they cannot participate in the other channels of information. But I think that it's very early days to say. I think we will go through a phase of disillusionment with social media as well. And at some point, we have to understand that they're the same people who, I mean, you can find opinion leaders and journalists being in mass media, also in social media. So it's not that the the ones are not infecting the others, if we speak in those terms, which I don't embrace anyway. So I think that we have to be quite, we have to observe, we have to understand how it's functioning, but it's very early days to say how it will be in 10 years from now.
Thank you very much, Vasiliki. The question of social media, politics, is it empowering? Do we trust it? What's your opinion on this?
I haven't studied social media, but as a user, I know that there are many ways to use it, to use them. And there are opportunities. Through the social media. During the pandemic, social media were very important for communication and for information. It is not black and white. I think I am in favor of what Labrini said, that it is perhaps too early to make our final decision about social media. And we have actually mixed feelings about opportunities and risks social media bring with.
Okay, thank you very much. We are running out of time. But before I close the seminar, could I just ask Stefano one last question? What do the politicians think of WuliWatch? What do the members of parliament think of WuliWatch? You've talked a lot about what VuliWatch is trying to achieve in terms of trust, in terms of transparency, in terms of citizens, in terms of the electorate. But what's the reaction been amongst the people who are under the microscope, as it were?
Yeah, well, you see, this the funny thing is, and I think that this is something that I would like to give credit to VuliWatch, is that their reaction and perception and attitude and stance towards VuliWatch has changed over time. When we first approached politicians with our views, with our idea and with our project, they were the vast majority of them were very, very, very hesitant to participate in any form. Most of them did not conceive of, you know, the benefits of, you know, more transparency and openness and a mediated basically channel of communication with citizens, and especially young citizens who mostly use VuliWatch. But this over the years has changed. I mean, MPs that 4 years, 5 years ago wouldn't want to have anything to do with VuliWatch, now have sort of integrated, you know, answering to citizens' questions via our platform on their almost daily sort of routine. So, you know, it's improving. Their attitude and their approach towards VuliWatch is improving. And this is a sign that, you know, maybe we've helped them understand over the years that, you know, openness and being scrutinized by the public is not that bad after all. So, you know, I'm positive that this attitude will carry on, and it's a first step towards pushing for more transparency in other sectors of public life and political life too in the future.
Okay, thank you very much. We have reached the end of our time. I'd like to thank, obviously, our audience for participating and listening and watching. Of course, I'd like to thank our panelists, Vasily Georgiadou, Lamdini Rory, and Stefanos Loukopoulos for contributing to this very rich discussion. Could I just remind our audience that we have a very apposite next event at the Hellenic Observatory on Tuesday, the 9th of November, which is co-organized with the Anglo-Hellenic League here in London. And the title is Battling Against Fake News in Britain and Greece. Can the mainstream media win? Something which, in a sense, we've touched on in the last hour and a half. The speakers are Tony Barber of the FT, Nikos Konstantaras of Kathimerini, Eleni Varvitsioti, also of the FT, and David Patrick Arakos, who's an author and analyst. The event will be moderated by John Kitmer and chaired by Kevin Featherstone of the Hellenic Observatory. Thank you all very much for your thoughts and sharing your views with us. And I hope that the audience will join us in the near future at one of our next Hellenic Observatory events. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.